Log Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems, so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Yeah!
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin. I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me. And however, he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone. And I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called, and I punched in the code, and he said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this it. I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, I wanted to be on TV. I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday. And I can hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. See, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This is a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back and I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida, and that night I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm gonna give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone, I call Chuck Sutton. I said, hey, man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I called Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the sixth floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there. Another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduced myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I'd have had this four pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie, then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass, then he went back to them jokes, and they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps, and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was, they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened. The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just said, Lord, Lord, Lord. And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. They paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I had never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host amateur night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted amateur night, and I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because the Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at the Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida. I make $300. Then I go to New York, I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful.
All right. Today, our podcast is titled Your First 40 Acres, Your First 40 Acres, and then we're up to Tiny Town 22, so we'll be right back after that.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005, and my accountant had gotten in cahoots. And next thing you know, my accountant died, and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years, signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see $100,000, $600,000
deducted. So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for two straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming. Sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Whoa. Oh, Jesus. He had to pay back $22 million. Payment plan, that's a hell of a payment plan. $650,000 a month. But he pulled it off. Okay, now, we might add, you know, I think we might play that on a regular, on our morning rotation. Here today, okay, our jump off title is, before we go to the phone lines, because we feature one tiny town a day. So we're up to number 22, And today's podcast is titled Your First 40 Acres. Your First 40 Acres. And the tiny town that we're featuring today is Dalton. That's the highlight. We'll feature too, but Dalton, Missouri. And to give you some information on that, Dalton, Missouri, a farmer somewhere out in Missouri donated 40 acres of land to somebody. Today, now Dalton, Missouri is about 115 acres big. And it's known for the Dalton Vocational School. And the Dalton Vocational School was founded by Nathaniel Bruce. And Nathaniel Bruce was a disciple of Booker T. Washington. And Dalton Vocational School was, was originally called Bartlett Agricultural and Industrial School, you know, building trades, agricultural and building trades. And it was also known as Missouri Tuskegee or Tuskegee of the Midwest. And that was started by Nathaniel Bruce. Now, let's see. Let's go and get more information on Dalton or Nathaniel Bruce. And let's see. Okay. All right. The Dalton School served as a beacon at the top of a hill in the Northwest Kingston area. We got to see. Nathaniel C. Bruce founded the school, which he dubbed the Tuskegee of the Midwest. Now, one of the directors of Booker T. Washington was, he told his students at Tuskegee, if you want to get ahead economically, racially, what have you, go out and start your own town. He's my favorite civil rights leader, hands down, going away. And Nathaniel C. Bruce, although he didn't start a town, he did start a school based on the technology at the time, which was agriculture. And then we're going to look at agriculture today, where to get in on the bandwagon with that. Anyway, let's see. Bruce had a passion for education and dedicated most of his life to it. For decades, the Dalton School was the only choice for African Americans from five counties to attend. Bruce shared Booker T. Washington's philosophy of African-American education, including the protesting, instead of protesting against discrimination, he believed black people should strive for recognition and the rights of citizenship by elevating themselves through an industrial education. Translation, learn the building trades. Learn the agricultural trades, okay? Hard work and accumulation of property. Let me read that. And the accumulation of property. The Dalton School has many connections to Columbia, Missouri. Several existing former Columbia students attended the school. All right, let's see. And on our Facebook page, which is Earth Wealth Forward, you can reach it. It's My House or Earth Wealth. If you can't get it that way, type in Earth Wealth Forest. Earth Wealth, one word, not two words. Earth Wealth, one word. Forest, and you should find it. I've got pictures of Nathaniel Bruce and, two, three, four pictures of Dalton, Missouri, which is our highlight for today. All right. But if you want to find out more about Nathaniel Bruce and the Dalton School, Nathaniel Bruce, you can just look that up online. That's number two. That's our 22nd Tiny Town feature. And what you're going to see, because if I put this stat out here before, there's 103,000 towns in the United States. Only 10 of them have a population of a million or more people. So I haven't even gotten up to towns that have 50 people in them yet. I don't think I have. There are more tiny towns than there are your big mega towns. And it's the towns that have a population of 5,000 people or, well, I'll go as high as 30,000 people or less. Then you want to see the real United States. And the smaller the population you see, is that's where you'll see, oh, wait a minute. Here's a place where I can, you know, where there's some opportunity. Now, you're going to have a pioneer mindset, but, you know, that's how it is. Okay, what else? Oh, now the other town I want to mention today is, I got to go to my program notes. Let me find my way back to the studio. Is Yoder, Kansas. And Yoder, and there's a lot of Yoders. Yoders is a community, it's a town. It's here in the United States, obviously. It's an Amish town. But, and you don't have to be Amish to do what they're doing. But I discovered some interesting statistics. You know I'm all into that. All right, let's get to it. Now, Yoder, Kansas, you looked them up online. They have an interesting, they have a township, what I consider a township slash family model. Yoder, Kansas has a population of anywhere between 165 to 185 people. That's it. It's an Amish slash Mennonite community. 100% of the businesses in Yoder, Kansas are privately owned. No government agencies in there at all. Once again, the 100% of the businesses in Yoder, Kansas, which is over 100 years old, are privately owned. So you can't get a government job in Yoder. Number two, now once again, they got a population, the numbers I got here this morning, 165 to 185. There's 72 households in Yoder, Kansas. 72 households out of that make up that 165 to 185 people. And they're out of those 72 households, there are 39 businesses, all family-based, all privately owned. Now, Yoder is not an outlier because if you type into any search engine online and type in a map, Amish communities or Amish towns or Amish villages, or even Mennonite, and you'll see, particularly with the Mennonite, you'll see communities globally. And these are people that started their own towns. So they're not teeny tiny towns, but they're small towns. If you type in Yoder, Yoder, Kansas, they have their own website and their own Chamber of Commerce. And here's another statistic. Out of those 39 households in Yoder, out of those 72 households in Yoder, only one house has a mortgage. Just one out of 72 households has a mortgage, and more than likely it's not even a bank loan. More than likely it's probably an owner finance loan, something, a private mortgage. And we'll get into owner financing, private mortgages, and all that on another podcast. So these people do not get in debt to the bankers, you know, the Wells Fargo's, the Bank of America's, and all those folks. And whatever, whatever bank you might go to or whatever. But once again, Yoder is not an outlier. The other utilities, other communities like that. All right. All right, now, okay. Let me go back to my studio again. All right, well, that's getting back to the title. Okay. Your first 40 acres. All right, on your way to your first 40 acres, I do not recommend to try to get the 40 acres all in one fell swoop if you're doing things solo. It's real easy to do. It in my opinion, it's easier to buy 40 acres as opposed to renting an apartment or buying a single family house. You can get 40 acres really simple in many cases. If you're buying it in a rural area. And if you're trying to buy 40 acres in a place like Chicago or San Diego, where you're going to need cash, it'll be more difficult. So let me put that out. If you want it, the easiest way to get your first 40 acres is to exclusively look for land in rural areas. Okay? Now we're saying looking. We ain't saying pull the trigger yet. Okay, now, I'm speaking to you as an individual. Now, I stand at about 14 acres right now. All right. I had, prior to the pandemic, in addition to the 14 I have right now, I had 40 more acres. But I had gotten all that by myself. But when the pandemic came along, I had to let 40 of it go. So now I've got 14, and that's pretty solid. All right, super low taxes on a yearly basis. My taxes on 10 acres of that 14 acres was even $37 for the whole year on 10 acres. And then on the 4 acres, which is in a more densely populated area in a different state, I think I paid $208 or $280. I think $208, and I was late. You know, it had to be $208. I was late paying that. Had I paid it when I first got the bill, it would have been $134. So what I'm going to do prior to next year is, when I get that bill, either I'm going to pay it off as soon as I get it, let's say it's $134, it would probably go up. But let's say it's $134. All right, $50 a month until it's done, So you know, then I'm done with it within, you know, three months at the most. Okay, so, all right, I'm trying to find my way back to the studio. Not trying to. I'm back in there, but I got to let it populate. So, yeah, we're presenting these towns on a daily so you can get, you know, get some ideas. Now, once again, so if you're not, I don't recommend if you're alone to buy the first, I mean, it's easy to do solo, but when you get a piece of land, even if it's a half acre, a quarter acre, or something smaller than that, it does, there's some factors you need to consider. Okay, and remember, an acre is the size of a football field, an American football field. So your first 40 acres is like 40 football fields. That's a lot for one person, one or two people. So I would recommend, you know, get a small patch of land, a backyard. You know, you can start off with a backyard, and then buy or a friend's backyard, and then because one of the things that you're going to have to look at is security. You're going to have to look at, do you have a system, and do you have the stomach to handle, you know, let's say just 1 acre of land, or even a quarter acre, because you know. If you're growing food, you know, you got to, you know, how to deal with pests, you know, rabbits, and depends on where you are, deer and neighbors or people you don't know that they know you. So you have to look at security, you know, how to protect it. And, you know, if you get to an acre, okay, as Beasley spoke about earlier this week, you know, what are your perimeters there? Are you going to go camping on it? What's your future plans for it? Are you going to build a home there to live on? Are you going to have your own garden? Are you going to have a guest house? The infrastructure. You can do a whole lot with an acre. You can put like 22 houses on a 22 to maybe 40 houses on an acre of land. It's a lot. Okay. So not that with me, it's 3 to 4, no more than 7 places where people can actually put a tiny house on. And then I will have more rules than that, but that's another podcast. So I would say start off with something that you can manage. And then if you're going to, if you know, even at an acre, you might consider getting a partner. You might consider getting a partner. Because the higher you go up the ladder, the more you have to, you know, have a system put in place to discuss that. Now, one day we'll discuss, there was a couple out in Colorado that they bought 1,000 acres of land. And I'm going to see if I can get them on this program one day so you can talk to them in person. But, you know, if the picture I have of it, definitely is not a complete picture. I do not know the backstory, not passing judgment. So, you know what, let me use myself as an example. I'm not ready. Now, it's real easy to get hold of 1,000 acres of land. Easier than buying a car. Now, once again, you got to go. You got to know where to go, though. You're not going to pull it off in New York City, but in New York State, you can get you 1,000 acres of land. All right. Now, here's the thing: even if it's not 1,000 acres of land, or even if it's 100 acres of land, you can't. As a matter of fact, let me give you a personal example. On my little 4 acres, I've gotten lost on my 4 acres of land. Why? Because on the 4 acres, it's wooded. It's not densely wooded. It's some other places because it's got open pockets in there and whatnot. We get a lot of sunlight. But because if you step just a few feet from the road, you won't even see the road or what you drove up in there. Just a few feet. But that's the way I wanted it for security reasons. So you can go, you know, it's easy to get lost on just 4 acres. And you know what? I'm going to say an acre. You can get lost. If you got, the natural shrubbery with that other kind of stuff, you can get lost on an acre of land. If it's, you know, that considerable, you know, vegetation on it. So can you imagine, like, with 100 acres, let's say if you got 100 acres and there's no trees on it, you can't even see the borders of your property. And that's at 100 acres. Can't see the borders of it. You might be able to see it at 25 to 50 acres. But definitely at 100 acres, you can't see the borders of it. To say nothing of 1,000. If you have 1,000 acres of land and you stand right smack in the middle of it and you turn around, you cannot see the book. You can't see the end of your property. So with your first 40 acres, I would suggest start off small. Get nothing. I'm just suggesting this. Unless you have partners, okay, you can do what you want to do. Okay, I'm just saying. But, Beasley, we're going to have him on here again to break all that down for us. But setting up perimeter, how to set up perimeter, security, and all that. Because, let me go back. Now, like I say, this couple out in, Colorado, they bought 1,000 acres of land, and they had problems with neighbors. Now, I don't know how you have problems with neighbors when you got 1,000 acres of land, but it does happen. It does happen. They had some of the animals killed or whatever. Now, they went to the NAACP. I think that was the wrong people to go to, but then that's just my opinion. But when you got 1,000 acres of land, or, you know, even something less than a quarter acre of land, how are you going to secure that property? And I'm just saying I don't believe the NAACP can help, because I don't think then, you know, I don't know. I didn't know that they were in that business, you know. But you have to put security first. And as Beasley said earlier this week, you have to anticipate things. But I want to get in touch with that couples, the husband and wife team. I want to get their, get it straight from the horse's mouth, you know, where they're from, their prior experience of getting 1,000 acres. Because, I don't know if they had a farm previous to that. I don't know if they were city dwellers. Because I don't know if they went from city dwelling or suburbia and then they jumped to 1,000 acres like that. Or did they grow up to 1,000? So we need to ask them that, you know, what did they do for security prior to that, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's best to hear from the horse's mouth instead of speculating. So we'll let you know when hopefully we can secure them and whatnot. So that's why I recommend on your 40, because you have 40 acres now. You know, Luckenbach, Texas, is 10 acres big. And there are other towns that are, you know, really not that big in size. So in any event, we shall feature that, and that's our line of business now, is starting or founding towns and then building tiny houses within those tiny towns. It's my house / that's our business. Now, we'll probably have some other. And we'll be offering a class, and the class will be titled Your First 40 Acres. All right, so let me go to the phone lines right now. 813, your mic is open.
These are some very interesting points. You know, you wouldn't think in these days and times, you buy your property, you know, 1,000 acres. How could you possibly have issues with the neighbors? But
right.
Sometimes in these communities, you have long-standing issues such as
true.
Water, mineral rights. I mean, there's any number of reasons. Maybe they want to run you out because they want to possess the land. Maybe the land used to be in their family, you know. And so this is just a good example or reason, if you will, that you need to educate yourself on a whole bunch of different things to consider
right.
when you're moving in to a community. You know, how are you
yeah,
going
right.
to impact your community? How is the community going to receive you? Is there going to be pushback? You know? And so that's a
right.
Those people that with their animals killed, they were sending a major point to them, and I don't know what to say about that.
Well,
I don't know what to say about that.
I'm going to bring, we've had them on here twice before, some people I know out of Ohio, that happened
uh-huh.
to them. They had, it's a white couple, but they had, the husband was running for school board, and this is out past Zanesville, Ohio, and not in Zanesville, but a community outside of that, and the community's got maybe 900 people that live in that particular town. Very rural. I spent like 7 days out there participating in a workshop retreat. But he decided, now he's originally from Minnesota, and he wanted to run for school board. The locals wanted and he had been living there for at least 10, 15 years. So, you know, people knew him, and he was a member of the community, but for some reason, in this neck of the woods, since he came from another state, they did not consider him a local. He was married to a local, but they didn't consider him a local, and they didn't want a local on the school board. So I imagine they sent him warnings, but when he didn't drop out, one morning he and his wife came out, and at the barn, because they have llamas and all kind of farm animals, somebody delivered a message via they decapitated one of the llamas. So.
Yeah, see that?
Yeah,
I mean, that right there.
It happens.
You could go on someone's property and damage their property, their animals, their pets, their livestock. I mean, that's just insane. And they probably never found and even arrested anybody.
No.
Well, I don't know. I'm just speculating, but I would love to.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, see.
So it's because when you go to certain, and this is where social capital comes in at, because I would say in a lot of rural areas, rural to even remote areas, you know, like if you're in New York City, you got to be somebody, and a lot of times in a lot of these major cities, I imagine a high percentage of those phone calls are what I consider frivolous phone calls. People can actually settle between themselves. But when you're in a rural, in many rural areas, maybe not all, but in many rural areas to remote areas, and something pops off negative, if you don't have social capital skills on how to de-escalate stuff, you know, you can call up, let's see, the county sheriff, you know, let's say you call Andy Taylor. Andy, we got a problem here. And Andy's sheriff's office might be 1 to 2 hours away. Okay. So Andy might call you back in 1 hour, and did you get it straightened yet, or do you still need me out there? So people need to be aware of that. So,
And remember, Warren Houston taught us that the police, there's only like 3 or 4 things that they're authorized to do. They're peace officers and public safety. And so we're told to call the police, but in many instances when the police respond, there's nothing that they can do unless there's a crime being committed or there's a disturbance of the peace that they're bearing witness to. So even when old Andy, even if Andy got in the car and came up and showed up, right, you guys are having a domestic argument or fight or whatever, right? But there hasn't been any violence or no crime, he's going to tell you, well, you guys have to take this to family court. There's nothing I can do for you. Okay? So now he goes away, but that situation is still hot. And now homeboy or homegirl is probably really mad now. Now somebody is going to get beat up or killed. So I say that so that we have to stop looking to them, whoever they are, whether it's the government, the police, or whatever. We need to stand up on our own feet as a people and support each other as a people, because the government and the police and all of that is not for us. So when the police tell you, yeah, we're here to protect and serve John Q. Public, well, guess what? You are not John Q. Public. You are persona non grata. And I don't care. It's not a race thing. I don't care if you're white, black, Hispanic, man, women. You watch this. The only ones that's walking with any kind of liberty and grace these days are the LGBTQ LMNOPers. Okay? Everybody seems like.
Now, there's another group of people, Robin, and that's like what, like on 90 times, we're up to 22 so far. What I find amazing with these towns, these tiny towns so far, and the small towns I visited out in Oklahoma and in the state of Maryland, and even here in 45 minutes away in Eatonville, Florida, is that a lot of those town citizens elected not to have a police, number one, and then number two, the ones who have jails, the jails haven't been used for like decades, you know. So people in those if you want to get away from the police and even the threat of going to jail because the town does not even have a jail or they haven't used a jail in decades, check out one of these small, the tiny towns. Now, if you like hearing sirens throughout the day and you like drama and whatnot, or places that might have a crime wave, then, you know, you don't want to deal with a tiny town or even a small town. You go to your larger town. But once again, all right, there are 108,000 towns in the United States. About 19,000 of them, a little bit over that, are municipal townships. Out of that, 14,000 have a population of 5,000 people or less. Now, what we've been doing so far is we've been concentrating on town. We haven't reached a town that's got 20. We've done 22 features and 22 highlights, and none of them has had even 20 people yet. Now, I mentioned Yoder today, but Yoder wasn't a highlight town. The highlight town was Dalton, Missouri, population 7. Okay. So if you can't get along with people, you know. Now, granted, in Dalton and all the towns that we've mentioned so far, there's not a bus line.
So, okay, you know,
there's not a subway.
So that's when there's not a bus line or a subway, so that's an opportunity for a community-based business. Transportation, delivery,
right.
Supplies, all of that. Yeah.
Right.
So it
right.
could
that
be a community-based business.
But we've named
for...
Several communities. Mm-hmm. Find me one tiny town, and I'll find a bunch of other tiny towns or small towns connected to it that need just what you said. They need a transportation system. So you can have it. Now, you can do it one of two ways. You can start off with just an automobile because, you know, there are people that, you know what, all they need are doctor appointment runs. That's it. Other people, you know, once a week or every other week, they might need you to take them to the grocery store. That's it. All right. I know when I was out in Taft, Oklahoma, they have a Native American run casino out there in Muskogee County, Oklahoma. So it was the first time I've actually set foot in a casino. And I was amazed at the pensioners up in there. Cause I'm looking, man, these people don't need to really be in here gambling, but they are, you know, and I saw taxi cabs driving up and whatnot, with people that, you know, they got their little retirement check or their social security check.
Yeah.
And they're up here at the slot machine. That's what they do. So, cab drivers in Muskogee County, Oklahoma. They got, you know, you can get some records, like I said, but there's a lot of towns like, because I wanted to get to Redbird, Oklahoma. It was like 30 minutes away, but I couldn't get, there was no bus that went that way, no city bus that went that way, no intertown connector.
Yep.
And that's all throughout
yep.
the United States. So these 22 towns that
so if you,
excellent observation.
If you'd have put out. If you to put out on a community setting or community board or somewhere, hey, let's
right.
organize. And okay, and
right.
then because these tiny communities, these small communities, I guarantee are all within 30 minutes, certainly within an hour, to a major metropolitan area.
Oh, yeah, most are. Most are. As a matter of fact, I would even go as low as 15. Yeah, I would even go as low as little as 15 minutes.
Even if it's rural, so you have a community-based business that it's not only going to be serving that tiny community, but it's going to be serving the greater area too. So anything,
right?
Anything that's for the greater good of the community. See,
right? I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example, and I'll name some towns that I've actually set foot in. All right, you got Taft, Oklahoma, is a 15 to 20 minute drive to Muskogee, Oklahoma. In Muskogee, you can get any Walmart, T-Mobile, bowling alleys, Denny's, hotel, motels, Holiday Inns, you name it, it's in Muskogee, Oklahoma. Taft, which is very rural, but it's 15, 20 minutes away. Summit, Oklahoma, in another direction, 15, 20 minutes away. Tallahassee. I've been to Tallahassee. Tallahassee, 20, 30 minutes away. Redbird,
Maben,
Oklahoma,
Texas.
30 minutes away. Right.
Maben,
so,
Texas is 30 miles from Mexico.
Right.
I like that.
Or,
Maben,
you know, in
Texas.
Like in Presidio County. The Texas has at least 8 border towns. Now, in Presidio County, Presidio City, which is in Texas, in Presidio County, that is a border crossing. So Texas has at least official, they might have more than 8, but they have at least 8.
Okay.
Hold on, let me look that up right now.
I like
number...
that. Maben, Texas. I could actually get that, like, registered and everything, right?
The easiest way to do it immediately would be to do a LLC, Maben, Texas LLC, and then get it through that way.
And then get
or Maben Village,
that way.
Maben Village LLC. That's the quickest and legal way you can do that. And it's not going to get on
How does getting an LLC work for establishing a city with the county or the state?
That's a very good question. That's going to be part of the course. All right. The basic word for everything, a hamlet, a village, whatever you call it, a town, a city, what class of city, first class city, second class city, third class cities, fourth class cities, okay, those are all political titles, okay,
uh-huh.
And also tax-based titles, too.
Do you have a fan blowing? L.A., do you have a fan blowing? You need to have it not blow, in your direction, because when it blows past the phone, it makes your voice garble, and we can't hear you, and it happens every time that fan passes.
Okay,
sorry.
I just cut it off. Now, so you have these different distinctions now. Typically, depending on the state, okay, if you want it to be recognized by the state as I'll give an example. Taft, Oklahoma is a municipality, all right, which they collect taxes, and they have municipal water there that they, you know, they sell it to the people that live there. So now,
so you have Taft, Oklahoma,
you can find that. Yeah, well, Taft is incorporated. Now, literally right next door to Taft, and it's probably as old as Taft, and I've been in it 5 or 6 times. They have a church there. I don't know if they have a school there. They have their own graveyard there, people that live there, generational wealth and all that. It's Blackjack, Oklahoma. I have not been able to find Blackjack, Oklahoma online yet, but I've been in it 5 or 6 times, okay? Because it's literally right, it's connected to Taft, Oklahoma. But it's in an unincorporated part of Muskogee County, Oklahoma, all right? Now, in 2023, like if you want your place to be considered a town, I mean, and recognized by the state government or county government, all right, then you have to, you know, you have to have so many people living there, then they have to be of a voting age, and you got to write a petition, and it's got to go through an act of Congress. All this can get expensive. And then if it passes, then your place can be called, recognized as a state. As a town. And then if it's got a certain population into the thousands, you know, then you can call it a city. And then what matter of fact, let's look it up right now. Definition or define first class city. All right, what's what is a first class city? So what do they say that is? All right, a first class city is a city with a population of 10,000 people or more at a time of an organization or reorganization with an adopted charter. All right.
Did you know they've got a prison in Taft?
They have two of them. They have one for men, one for women.
Wow. So that's their livelihood.
That's currently their primary livelihood, yes. Remember, the town is older than the state of Oklahoma. It started out being an agricultural place.
I'm not seeing Blackjack at all on the map.
That's what I'm saying, because it's unincorporated. And it's less expensive than to live in Blackjack, Oklahoma, than Taft, Oklahoma, and they're literally physically right next door to each other. Once again, every time I go to Taft, I go to Blackjack. It's like walking across your lawn to your next door neighbor's lawn. It's like that. So they have their own churches. They have, you know, their own cemetery and all that. That's where Sarah Rector is buried, who was the wealthiest black woman, a girl when she was 12 years old. But it's unincorporated. Now, with a municipality, you have the charter powers to have your own municipal services. They elected not to have their own police force. And when they did have it, it was only one person. And the citizens of Taft said, you know what, we don't need this. All of us know each other. So they axed that out. But they do have to pay for water, because that's a municipal service. They do have a mayor, and they do have a city council. Okay, and then they have a little dump yard there, you know, where you can dump stuff. All right. They used to have a public school there, but then that got annexed, closed down to something else. And they do have their city hall building, and they do have a gym which has access to the community. All right, now, in order to pay the stipend for the mayor and the city council and, you know, the city hall building, the maintenance of that, and to keep the gym open and operating throughout the year, and to pay for, they have a Memorial Day bash every year, which is well attended, that comes from people paying taxes to the municipality of Taft, Oklahoma, which is at maybe 350 people. However, right next door in unincorporated Blackjack, Oklahoma, you know, they don't have trash pickup. They're responsible for their own trash pickup, which is a municipal service. They don't get that. Recycling, they have to be responsible. They don't get that. You know, they don't have a police force. They don't have a school system there. They don't have a public library there. So that is less expensive to be in an unincorporated area, and they do have unincorporated areas throughout the United States. So
wow.
If so,
and they're
the
and
citizens
right
of Blackjack,
smack dab in the middle.
Huh?
Right smack dab in the middle of major metropolitans too.
Right. Now let's see.
Yeah.
So a first class city in the United States, you got to have at least 10,000 people. Now you can start a village with one person. One person will be your first villager, and whatever tent that they stay in, because Taft, Oklahoma started with a handful of families that they were Native Americans, Black Native Americans, and they said, you know what, you got 80 acres, I got 160 acres, you got 160. Let's combine this and form our own town, and therefore that's where the municipality comes in at. Whereas there are other people that might have 1,000 acres, but they don't want to be classified as a municipality. Because that community then has to pay something to the state. You know, so let's get to
I see Blackjack Church.
Yeah, but
they have Blackjack Church, but they don't have Blackjack. You can't see it. You can barely see Taft on the map.
Exactly. Now, I discovered Blackjack by accident. I was at a city council meeting in Taft, Oklahoma. And at this particular town hall meeting, city council meeting, somebody who lives in Blackjack, which is right across the lawn, asked the question, and then that's how I discovered it. And I said, where is it? They said, it's right across. I was in somebody's backyard, and they pointed at their yard.
Yeah, so I'm looking at North 94th Street West and West 20th Street North. And if you're right there, you can point. Blackjack is like right across this. You're right there.
Every time I go to Taft, I go to Blackjack. Every time. And there's a whole lot of towns like that which I consider off the radar. I'm answering your question. Now, there are fourth-class cities. Now, let me read the definition, the general definition of what a fourth-class city is. Wait a minute. Let's see. What are the classes of city in Missouri? All right, in Missouri, cities are classified, now this is cities, not towns, not villages. In Missouri, cities are classified into three types, third-class cities, fourth-class cities, and those under constitutional charters. Let's see. A fourth-class city act in Michigan, you have to have a population of 3,000 to 10,000 people in order for it to be a fourth-class city. Now, Detroit, which has like 900,000 people, that's a first-class city. All right. But a lot of these towns started with one person or a handful. Like Houston, Texas is a first-class city. But you've got over 1 million people that live in it now. But it started off with two brothers who bought 2,000 acres of land. When they died, there wasn't even 2,000 people living in Houston. So just like the Freedom Georgia Initiative, 19 families bought 97 acres. You can say it's a settlement, but they call theirs the Freedom Georgia Initiative. So you can call it Maben Village LLC or Maben Town LLC or Funky Town LLC. Get it on record because it's just an LLC. And then you can sell membership into your community via your LLC. That's a legal way to do it.
And then that would make it recognized as a
It won't be recognized as a municipality, but it'll be recognized as the type of community that you just named it. And I'd rather keep it because, once again, the matter of fact, if you look at the common denominator we talked about yesterday or the day before, cities, the top 10 cities where you have to be a millionaire to buy a new home, like Seattle, Washington, one of New York City, Los Angeles, those places.
Once I register, then I'm making my place a potential for being all that, and plus liable for taxes and taxation and all that politics.
It's best to keep it. You can call it Maben Town LLC. You can perfectly do, but it won't be a municipality. There's a police, because you got to grow to 3,000 people, 10,000 people. Then you got to go through this charter, the politics. Whereas you can have Freedom Georgia, they're up to 502 acres. When they spoke to us here, there were 19 families on 97. They had 502 acres then. So 19 families, and they're good. And every town that I've read on here,
are these 1 acre towns on the map?
I've featured two 1 acre towns: Punkyville, Kentucky, which I think only two people there, Punkies, now passed over. And what they did was they had Punkyville is part of an 18 acre farm in Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
He took 1 acre and he started Punky Town. Luckenbach, Texas, who I play that song every other day on here probably. Luckenbach, Texas is 10 acres big. That's it. Three households. Lobo, Texas is 10 acres big. That's it.
And they're recognized as a city?
They're recognized as a town. Not a city. A town. All right.
That's what I mean. Fundamentally, I'm maybe saying city, but I mean, I want to, my aim is to get on the map. I want to be recognized so that when people Google come up on the map. You know?
All right. We got to crawl before we can walk now. The common denominator with everything from Luckenbach, Texas, Taft, Oklahoma, Black Jack, Oklahoma, which is over 100 years old, to New York City, to Everett, Washington, to Houston, Texas, all those places, mm-hmm. to Chicago, Illinois, all those places were not, when they started out, were not legally recognized as a city or a town. They were all settlements. Today, they're still settlements, except now you can say, well, if I want it recognized as a city that somebody can find on Google, all right, then in this particular state, if it's going to be recognized as a fourth, because there's a distinction, They're first-class cities, second-class cities, third-class cities, or fourth-class cities. All those are municipalities. If you want, you know, if and you want all that kind of stuff, it's going to cost more money. All right, and but you're going to have to grow your population to have 3,000 to 10,000 people first. All right, the town of where you're at, which you're familiar with, Everett, Washington, started out with one person who bought 600 acres of land and built a log cabin and lived by himself. That's how it started. So I would say get the land is step one. Number two,
Luke
name it
Bob
whatever you
Texas.
Want to name it. You can call it Mabinville or whatever, Mabinville or Mabintown, LLC. That's legal.
Lukenbach, Texas has a population of 3, and they are
and 10 acres.
On the map.
On 10 acres.
What?
But look how
right.
long Lukenbach's been around.
But the population.
Look how long it's been around.
In 2006 was 3, and so they've got 3 people, and they're on the map.
They're on the map, but look how old Lukenbach's over 100 years old, and laws and rules have changed in those 100 years.
Okay.
You got to factor that in. It's just like I tell people, if you want to get wealth in this country, the best people to study are the people who signed the Declaration of Independence. How did they get wealthy prior to July 4, 1776? Well, number one, on July 4, 1776, there was no such thing as the United States dollar. That didn't even get legislated until 16 years later. There was no DMV. All the government agencies that we have around today were not around. There was dramatically less government regulation in 1776 than it is in 2023. So if you want to get wealthy in 2023, in the physical world, I'm not talking about all online and cyberspace, look at what the Amish have not plugged into the system as the average critical mass person has done. The Amish with their horse and buggy and electric bikes, they don't need to go to the DMV. So they don't need insurance. You know, they don't need any of the hassles that you deal with when you're dealing with a motorized vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like with Yoder, Texas, out of the 79 households in Yoder, Texas, only one has a mortgage. Just one. And more than likely, that's a mortgage that somebody held back from him, which is a private mortgage. Didn't come through an institutional lender. Yoder has 39 businesses. All of them are private. There's no government agency to provide jobs in Yoder, Texas. So you start off with
Mabintown.
Mabintown LLC. That's something that you can register today, and it's legal.
And
now, will you find
and
it?
And guess what?
Now,
people,
will you find it
and
on
guess
Google?
What people,
no.
Uh huh.
Oh, no,
yeah.
Let me throw this in there. Now, on the 4 acres that we have in Hamilton County, Texas, Florida. All right. Which you have pictures of, and you can locate it. If I give you the coordinates, you can locate it on a map. But I don't have a 9/11 address. All right?
Mm-hmm.
9/11, in order to get a 9/11 address, I'm going to have to apply for that, and they'll give me, I'm going to have to pay for that. And what does a 9/11 address, what is a 9/11 address for people who don't know? Well, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. In Washington, D.C., White House, that's a 9/11 address. Whatever address that you're listening to me on right now in the United States, that's a 9/11 address. That means if I have a medical event or whatever, that I can call 911 or whatever, the 311 or whatever the emergency is in that neck of the woods. And as part of the municipal services, they can see where I'm at, and part of their municipal services, they can come pick me up and then carry me off to the hospital. That's, you know, that you have, you're paying for that address that you have. All right, now with me, I don't want a 911 address. I don't want anybody popping up on me at that particular 4 acres or whatever, and I'll set up my own independent system like the Amish and the Mennonites. I'll set up my own system. Because if I get a 911 address, my $134 a year tax property tax bill is going to shoot up. So now I'll keep me at a low property tax. Now, let's get to you in Presidio County, your two-acre spread there, all right? The property taxes on that for the whole 10 acres was $37, and I paid that late. That's $37 for the whole year, and I paid that late. But I don't want a 911 address on that as of yet, because as soon as I get that, the tax bill is no longer is going to go above 50. I'm cheap, y'all.
It's going to be $1,000.
Exactly.
It's
so
going to be $1,000 because they have you paying for the jails, the paramedics,
the
fire,
you know,
schools,
the
roads.
All that, roads. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So, like, now, what I call the 4 acres up in Jasper, the 4 acres spread, I call that Earth Wealth Forest because it is wooded. And within that, on about a quarter acre or a half acre, there'll be Earth Wealth E-Village. It won't be the only village in there, because, see, we can have Mavenville in there, too. Now, Mavenville East, whatever you want to call it. So, anyways, but so if you want something to pop up on the map, you're going to have to grow in numbers, and then you're like in Taft and many other cities across this country, they democratically said, we don't want a police force, we don't need it. But every community
get the LLC, right, and then put my amphitheater on there, just like I said. And that will definitely get me on the map at some point.
Right.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's going
to
know, how am I going to get to the amphitheater in Mabin Town?
Right.
So they're going
to
look it up.
Well, you know,
after
you get the LLC form, you can do it there. But
but
that's a very good question. We'll go more into detail on that too.
And I want to share with everyone too, getting an EIN for your business, your LLC, your entity, it's free. So don't make the mistake a lot of people do. They search out EIN, get an EIN number, and then they click on the first thing that pops up. And the first thing that pops up is usually going to charge you a fee. And so there is no fee. An EIN, obtaining an EIN number is free. And you can go online at the irs.gov directly. And get one up until, I think, 10 o'clock at night. So,
okay.
7 days a week, I believe. I just wanted to share that information, because when you're out there venturing to expand, and especially cities and tiny towns and foundings, things like that, you're going to get people coming out of the woodworks offering you services, but they're really there to take advantage of you and rip you off. So
yeah.
You just want to be very wise.
We'll be given more. That'll be part of the class that we're offering. The class is titled Your First 40 Acres. So we'll be going through, you know, basically, you know, how everything's a settlement. But, you know, if you want it to be called this, what kind of population you need or whatever. But like I said, we're fundamentally, no matter how big the town is, it's, you know, like I said, they're small. They started off, you know, one person, 10 people, what have you. And then,
interesting.
You know, they grew. Let's see. I mean, just Mississippi, their family, and they've got 300 acres of land. It's called the Booth Settlement. Now, they can call it something else different. And then, you know, when it was started, they probably could have upped it to, you know, I don't know how many people live on that 300 acres or whatever. But remember now, here are the distinctions. You have municipal townships, because there are different distinctions of townships. They're municipal townships, and municipal townships offer municipal services, police, public libraries, public schools, fire department, and some more stuff, okay? That costs money, all right? And they're getting it from typically from tax bills and all, you know, sales tax and all that. The second distinction would be, or type of town, okay, would be unincorporated. Blackjack, Oklahoma is a good example of it. You're not going to find it on the, you know, you found a church, Robin, but it didn't tell you where it was. Okay. I think I might have a picture of that church in my photographs or whatever. But it's the town is not on the map, but it's there because I've been there several times. Number three, let's see. You have, closed towns, and you can look on Wikipedia. There's a Wikipedia article that'll define what a closed town is. You also have private towns. Tavistock, New Jersey, is a private town. Okay. You have also company towns. Hershey, Pennsylvania is a company town. I would venture to say Yoder, Kansas is a company town. Once again, there are 165 to 185 people that live in Yoder, Kansas. They're all entrepreneurial families. Okay. There's 79 households and 39 businesses. Everything's privately owned. By the way, there are also black Amish villages. We'll feature that at a future date. So let's see what else.
Black
trading
Amish.
Post towns. Yeah, they got black Amish. We'll do a feature on them soon. Then there's trading post towns. Now, some of these towns, they can interchange, okay? Because like in China or even here in the United States, like for instance, and Pianchi shared this on here, there's some villages, and then throwing villages too, you know, we'll break all that down because like you got first class, second class, third class, fourth class cities, you got then towns, census designated stuff, and we'll break all that down. Okay. And, but like I say, the easiest thing to start is a village because all you need is a patch of dirt and one villager. That could be you. You start off, New York City didn't have 8 million people to start off on day one. All right. Everett Washington, as we talked about over already, It's got over 100,000 people that live in Everett, Washington right now. Okay, with the infrastructure and all that, Everett, Washington started off with 600 acres of mostly wood. There might be some streams running through there. And a guy with no power tools, but he had a vision. And his immediate vision was to build him a cabin and live in it. Now it went from that to, but it didn't do that overnight. So we'll go through that on, look, we got to crawl before we can walk. And then some people, like in every town that I mentioned, they don't want to live in a heavily densely populated area. Once again, there are 19,000 plus municipalities in the United States. There are over 77,000 unincorporated towns in the United States. And out of the municipal towns in the United States, which is 19,000 plus, okay, the majority of them, what, 7%, 75% of them, they have a population of 5,000 people or less. And it's just less expensive for them to live in those areas than in, you know, your more densely populated areas. All right, 309 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning. Wonderful show today so far. Been paying attention here. You know, also, that a town that was built by a mill is Kannapolis, North Carolina. And it's an entire community, and it goes on for other communities. It is multiple communities. Maybe you might reduce a little, you know, give a little people some homework along like you do. Look up Cannon Mills and its beginnings and how many mills did it take to run that textile industry to give everyone their
power. How do you spell that, Chris? How do you spell that? With a K? Cannon Mills with a K or
no? No, Cannon, just like, and it has the emblem Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N. And they're
what,
right,
North
now
Carolina?
They're called Fieldcrest Cannon now.
Okay.
And you will see that, like, when we found that city that had a lake and a dam and everything was liable to have been a Cannon Mills mill. They shut a lot of them down when Fieldcrest took over. But in the growth of it, they built all the housing. They built all the roads in. They put the municipalities in place. They did everything they're supposed to do. And I'm sorry, I'm dipping down the street here. But that city was quite beautiful. You know, and it's big. It's not a small town. And the thing is it's connected. Right now, Kannapolis and Concord and Charlotte are connected. And there used to be a long distance between Charlotte and Concord. But there's one strip that runs down through there, and it is called Cannon Boulevard. And Cannon Boulevard runs through, I'm wanting to say, 5 or 6, 7 cities right there and connects all the way to South Carolina. And you will see things the entire time. When they started this country, they started with industry, and whatever the industry was, if they had workers, mining towns, any of that, you know, whether they were living in tents or whether they had a house, they still had a saloon. They still had the goods. They still had, you know, even the mortuary, you know, because people die on a daily, right? And they do it right here in our own cities. So, you know, there's a lot of different businesses that can spark up from just starting a community. And it's to support your community. And when I seen a community step up yesterday, just shocked me, you know, to turn around and see them not want to see a family become homeless because they stepped up and bought a house. And by buying that house, that family ain't getting thrown out, but they were claiming a problem before it was a problem. Because the landlord said, I don't want to evict you. I'm going to make the new landlords do it. I'm just going to take my loss right here. I'm just going to sell the property. And he wasn't taking a loss. He was getting paid. But to see a city step up and they all kick in a little bit in the kitty and pay the bill, and now that family's not worried about being homeless. You know, that guy didn't ask to become 90% paralyzed that I can't take care of my family. But there's a lot of people in this country that's not set up. And if you get hurt today, what's going to happen tomorrow? And you're going to stress on it, which that's going to kill you. So we want people to realize, hey, wait a minute, you know, if this happens, let's put a resolution to it. Because if we don't, all it does is become a problem. And, you know, these are just lives, right? The thing about life is you can't ever predict it. And the thing is you can plan, but your plans will change. I guarantee you, if you went on vacation, you are not going to do exactly what you thought you were. You're going to do something else, because that's life. Things will come in front of you that you want to do, or will just make you do. And so, yeah, I'm excited about Mavisville, really, you know, or Mavis community.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you, girl. I'm with you. I'm excited about it. And you know, this city not only stepped up to do that, they've got two lots and a house. Well, they've got 17 unhoused young adults that are 18 to 24.
Yes.
So I told them I'm going to give them 25 house frames, and I wanted $20,000 a piece for them. They will be self-sufficient as far as we'll hook them to the city sewer and water, but we're gonna put them on solar. I said there's gonna be no bills. I said, and they're $20,000 a piece, and they're very excited about it because three times what they just saved a family to do. You know, that house was $149,000. But for three times that amount of money, they're going to be able to help 25 people at a minimum, because two people to three can stay in one of these units. I gave them units that are 10 feet wide by 15 feet long. They come with a full bathroom. I can go just a hair higher and give them sleeping lofts without a problem. And they like that. So I'm excited about it, you know. But
okay.
The thing was is
okay.
What they looked
yeah.
at, you know, they looked at, we just spent $149,000 help one family. You mean for $500,000 we could help all these kids? Now, you know, they've got
somewhere about.
Go ahead. No, yeah, you know, by helping helping the 17, but we know that there's six more that are couch surfing.
One more delivery.
Thank you.
You know, so there's more than what is out on the street than what is needed. And by being able to help the rest of them that are maybe coming out, but they've got a house that's sitting next door, five-bedroom home. So between these two lots and that five-bedroom house, we can easily sleep 50 people. And that's the cool thing about this, because them rooms there can actually have a couple in them, you know. They don't have to just be one person in there. It could be a couple, you know. So now we're helping people that are together, because that's one of the problems that we have with shelters is they separate people. And then they're the only people they have. Now they're really alone. Okay, so if you take your loved ones away, and now what are they supposed to say? What are they supposed to do? Where is the clue, you know? So the thing is just doing something that is meeting the need and stop with the criteria.
There, that's it. I've always said that. Like, they have the church benevolent fund, right? You pay your tithes into that, right? And let's say you get in trouble. You got a light bill. Your lights just got shut off. And you go, and then they says, well, you know, we have to come up with a plan so that how do we know that you're not going to get in this position again? And, you know, and it's like, yeah. Now, God don't ask none of that whenever you go to him in need. So why are you? Another thing, too, is all of those people, they might be unhoused, but they're not unskilled. These people have skills and livelihoods, you know, and they're probably all geniuses in their own right. So you can also, I call them a class. Each group of people will be a class, right? Whoever's in there right now, just call it a class, if you will. And that group of people, amongst them, will have talents and assets that maybe you can form a community-based business that will sustain them and the neighborhood. Will generate income for that community as well. So,
you know,
I don't know, just trying
said,
to help.
No, just what you said. Now, everybody on earth has no idea what they enjoy most on earth because maybe you haven't done it yet. Well, I've met people with 5 master's degrees that's homeless. And you wonder why they're homeless? Because they were beat down by every academic thing that they were, you know, too qualified to do the job. Because the person that's giving you the interview should be working for you. And if they give you the job, they know you're going to take theirs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is a big problem in society. And it happens all the way down to the homeless shelters. They are more worried about losing their job than they are getting the homeless off the street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not that you're going to come and take over their job and work at this place. They're afraid that if you take away the homeless, what are they going to do? Now, if you worked at a homeless shelter and you could end it, wouldn't that be the reason you're at the homeless shelter, is to stop this so that everybody has a house and now you can go home? You don't have to get up and come here. You can get up and go somewhere else. And that's
yes.
supposed to be the mentality. It is supposed to be the mentality. If you're going to work in the service industry for people, for the individual, for one, I just want to make sure we always take out the class. Everybody gets put in a category. We need to stop. We are not cattle. And it's true, you know, there's a lot of followers out there. And the thing is we have an addictive personality. And if we find something we like, even if it's something stupid that we keep just going back and watching this guy be stupid on a video, we're feeding it because that's our habit. That's what we enjoy doing that. It makes us laugh, you know. But at the same time, what could you have done in that same time? You know, what message could you have created? And that's where we need our children knowing that, because they're doing it. Our children are straight up social creators. They're playing with social media like nobody's business. And they're watching it constantly. It's just what they do. They flip from one to one to one to one to one. I want to get them all saying the same kind of thing of look what they couldn't do and look what we are doing. That right there is going to be the smack in the face for the human race. That's where our children become the teachers and the adults need to pay attention. won't cost you a dime, just a little bit of your time. But if you're going to listen, pay attention. And because, you know, here we are, you know, we're talking on the radio. So people are either hearing mumble jumble or maybe they're getting up and ready to rumble. Because all it takes is them to get up and do something, right?
We're talking on the radio and TV. And yes, you're right. Yeah, we're broadcasting live on not only Blog Talk, but we're on Vimeo, we're on YouTube, we're on Mixcloud, we're on Twitch, we're on, oh my goodness, probably about 15 different platforms now as well.
You said that yesterday, which we didn't get to.
Yeah,
I'll be getting with you
real, real soon. I'm the only engineer. There's 30 TV stations and 15 radio stations, and I'm the only engineer. So.
Wow. Well, we do need to talk because we need to build your team, and I've got thousands of interns.
Okay, great.
So,
hey, listen, everybody.
I
will call you. I have to run because I've got a client that I'm training. So I've got to say goodbye to everyone. Chris, I shall give you a call later this afternoon for sure.
Thank you, Robin. You have a wonderful day.
Okay. All right. Hey, LA, great show, and thanks for having me. I don't know. LA, you've got yourself muted. Well,
I'm sorry,
I got to put my phone on recharge. Chris, any final words for the day?
Okay.
I'm sorry, what was that, LA?
Any closing statements for the day?
Hey, I'm looking forward to next community that we're going to be presenting tomorrow.
Yeah, and remember now. Oh, that's Monday. That's Monday. Yeah, because today's Friday.
Monday. Yeah, today's Friday.
Today's Friday, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, now, don't forget to tell Dr. T we want to feature Hope, Georgia every week until you guys get that thing, done with and everything.
No problem. Yep. We'll be on the show. If you want, we'll do it Monday.
Yeah, Monday's fun.
And we've got video.
Monday's fun.
So I'm going to get Robin today. We'll, on our next show, we'll be able to show the video so that way it can be put out on TV and you'll be able to see, right? So we'll do
and
that.
And you can load that up to the Facebook page as well. So. That'll be good.
Awesome.
All right, we're going to end it there for today because we're in overtime. Everybody have a great weekend.